Good morning, planet Earth. The Ventron ships from Grid Quadrant 9 Delta Alpha are nearly in orbit. They're coming here to help us with our problems. They're coming here to, clean up the sea. They're going to bring us peace and joy for all the folk. All the crabs, all the birds in the sea. That's right. Because it's August the 23rd, 2024, Bo Blimp Doc. It's right around 6:30 a.m. here on the Olympic Peninsula. That's right, Friday. Friday, are you ready to party? Friday, August the 23rd, 2024. Who you gonna vote for? August the 23rd, 2024. Who you gonna vote for, baby? That's right. The first topic is more like history, right? Especially these days. I'm going to read something about an event that occurred in 1992. The event was Ruby Ridge. And this comes from the Britannica.com. There are many better sources. I don't consider this to be the best source, but I'm reading this as ironically as I can. Ruby Ridge, location of an incident in August 1992, in which Federal Bureau investigation agents and U.S. Marshals engaged in an 11-day standoff with self-proclaimed white separatist Randy Weaver, his family, and a friend named Kevin Harris in an isolated cabin in Boundary County, Idaho. Weaver's wife, Vicky, his 14-year-old son, Sammy, and U.S. Marshal William Deegan were killed during the siege. Randy Weaver, a former U.S. Army engineer, moved with his family in 1983 to a cabin he built on Ruby Ridge, about 40 miles from the Canadian border. Harris often stayed with the family in the cabin for extended periods of time. Weaver's troubles with the U.S. federal government began when he attended several meetings of the Aryan Nations, a white supremacist group, at its compound in Hayden Lake, Idaho, in the late 1980s. Weaver was not a member of the Aryan Nations, but he shared the group's white supremacist and anti-government views. At one of the meetings, Weaver befriended an informant of the Bureau of Alcohol and Tobacco Firearms, ATF, who purchased two illegal sawed-off shotguns from Weaver in October 1989. Oh, the plot thickens. When Weaver refused to become an informant for the ATF, federal agents pursued a weapons charge against him. He was arrested and released with a trial set for February 19, 1991. The trial was then moved to February 20th, but a probation officer sent a letter to Weaver incorrectly stating that the new trial date was on March the 20th. When Weaver failed to appear for trial, the court issued a bench warrant for his arrest. Weaver was subsequently indicted by a federal grand jury for failing to appear at trial, and the U.S. Marshal Service was tasked with arresting him. Marshals assessed that Weaver and his family were likely to resist violently if confronted directly, so plans for a stealth operation were drawn up. Oh, boy. On August 21, 1992, the situation turned violent after Weaver's dog discovered a surveillance team of six heavily armed U.S. Marshals inside the Ruby Ridge property. I got to stop right here, folks, because I am literally reading the standard narrative. This is the narrative that you would have heard discussed on the Bill Maher show back then. This is the narrative that allowed a lot of people to make fun of them. But it's stupid. It's the standard narrative, but it's so dumb. They're going to do a super stealthy operation with six heavily armed dudes on their property. And somehow, and I don't know how, they didn't consider that a dog would notice they were there. Maybe that's why they kill dogs, right? Although I think they did that before. On August the 22nd, Lon Horiuchi, an FBI sniper hiding about 200 yards from the cabin at Ruby Ridge, opened fire when he believed Weaver and Harris were preparing to shoot at an FBI helicopter. That just sounds so fucking stupid. How did people read this at the time and not say this? You know, I don't want to go there. The first shot hit Randy Weaver in the arm. Horiuchi fired a second shot meant for Harris. As the men ran back into the cabin, the bullet struck Vicky Weaver in the face while she held her infant daughter behind the front door of the cabin and also injured Harris. Vicky Weaver died soon after, but her body remained at the cabin for 11 days. Well, that's a lot to be around kids. August the 22nd, 1992. Fun fact about, you know, the year 1993. I'm going to fast forward a little. Fun fact about the year 1993. The same year, the ATF set fire to all those crazy people at Waco, killing a whole bunch of kids. But, you know, our necessary ally in the Middle East does the same thing, so it should not be surprising, right? The same year that they nuked Waco and the Branch Davidians, in that proverbial sense, is the same year that the feds gave tax-exempt religious status to Scientology. Now, why do I mention these two things in the context of Vicky Weaver? Well, I won't spend a lot of time on it, but I just ask you to think on such. The same year that our government ground Waco to dust is the same year that our government said that Scientology is a religion. And if you ask yourself who or what David Koresh did beyond maybe he was a creepy dude, I have no idea. Was he MK Ultra? Was he crypto whatever? Jew? I don't give a fuck. We'll talk about that next, but the very same year that a whole bunch of people never got a fucking trial. By the way, you don't just go to execution. I don't know if you know that or not, but if you believe your own bullshit about voting and good government and I vote because of the Supreme Court, that's your dorky shit you give me every four fucking years, bro. Well, if you believe your own dorky bullshit, we're all supposed to have a fucking trial. And the thing that Waco and Ruby Ridge have in common is whatever the guilt or innocence of these folks is, are, or were, they were denied a fucking trial. And, you know, the government skipped directly to execution. None of these stories add up, folks. Yesterday, you know, 32 years ago, what was it? Yesterday? 32 years ago. A woman, a mother, holding her baby, was killed by somebody who thought he or she was doing their job. And you can apply whatever nonsense justification you want to Lon Horiuchi. I don't know what to tell you. I met people when I was in the service that I think actually believed. I did for a while, and when I stopped believing, I got out. But I met people who believed, who took their oath seriously, who actually believed they were protecting and defending the Constitution, not the people, not the president, but the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign or domestic. But I also met really creepy people too. People who were just looking for a chance to kill. And at the time I thought, well, these are the 1 in 100, you know, 1 in 1,000. These are not the main guts of the military. These are just random pieces of shit. I forgive myself how naive I was back then. I do. How naive, how stupid. How John Hughes, growing up in the middle of nowhere, 1980s bullshit stupid I was. I will forgive myself and accept that I was a dumbass. These positions of authority, whether it's a senator, whether it's some douchebag running a school district, or whether it's a fucking sniper for the FBI or the ATF, I don't give a fuck. These positions of authority, they don't attract good people, mostly. It's the opposite of what I thought when I was a kid. They attract some of the most terrible, shitty people you're ever going to fucking meet. You could say to yourself, well, you know, they're not as bad, right? They're not as bad. They caught Ted Bundy and the Green River Killer, you know? Think on the Ted Bundys and the Green River Killers and ask yourself, what kind of shitty people would probably be pretty good at finding them if they wanted to, you know? Yesterday, 32 years ago, a woman was killed with her kid. The kid lived, but the mother died. The kid survived, but the mother is dead. A young boy was killed. Why? Because his dog found six idiots who thought they were going to be stealthy as they crept around on somebody's property, looking like they're fucking SS stormtroopers. This was 32 years ago. I was 22 years old when this happened. I mean, relatively speaking, I guess I was still a fucking kid. Nobody cared. When Waco happened, I can tell you truthfully, I cared. It was my last year at the UW. I was a senior in college, whatever the fuck that means now. And I was mesmerized. I didn't understand what I was seeing. In part, because I'd studied regimes, governments, tyrannies that had gone down this road. You see pictures, right? In a history book, you see a movie, but you never expect to actually see it. And what I was seeing was not the quote-unquote United States of America we were all supposed to talk about and believe in, land of the free, home of the brave. What I saw looked a lot like the NKVD in the Soviet Union in the 1930s, rolling up to somebody's farm, ready to machine gun the whole fucking family. But that was the Soviet Union under Stalin, right? I can't tell you whether Lon Horiuchi feels good or bad about what he did. I don't know him. I don't know the guy. It's entirely possible the guy has PTSD. I mean, let's just get that out of the way. Okay, let's not be total pieces of shit monsters. What he did was wrong. Who he did it for and why he did it was wrong. It's wrong also that so much of this country 32 years ago was so consumed by the economic boom time, right? Although, I think we were actually in kind of a recession, but we play pretend, right? But the point is, we were all so into our fucking lives that we didn't notice something that was really important, that the Bill of Rights was dead. People talk about, well, the Bill of Rights died here, or the Bill of Rights, it probably died when it was born. It was probably always lipstick on a pig. But what you should have seen, what you should have known, what we should have all known in 1992 after what happened at Ruby Ridge is that the Bill of Rights is dead. Whatever your fucking opinion is, whether you vote Democrat or Republican, whether you fucking like what I say or hate what I say, the Bill of Rights is fucking dead. And as far as your vote goes, I don't know. You can play pretend. You can talk about your own fucking conspiracy theories. I don't think it was ever going to work in the first place. If our system of voting and representatives could work, it would never work. It would always end up in a dystopia. Always. Next topic. Oh boy. Did you know that Star Wars is gay? Here's a headline from Zero Hedge. Get woke, go broke. Disney cancels gay Star Wars show, which I never knew existed, after one season. This was published yesterday. In the past 10 years, Disney has generated a magnificent reputation, well, for failure. Consider for a moment the overwhelming catalog of marketable properties the company has purchased through its. I can't read this garbage. Anyways, a show I never knew existed. The Acolyte has been canceled. I don't care. If you know about this, you can dig deeper. I don't give a fuck. The whole thing is so fucking stupid. The main point is, and this is, I believe, a quote from Dr. Freckles, Star Wars was always gay. It was always stupid. In some ways, we got suckered. The special effects were great, but that's the thing, too. For 1977, when episode four, yeah, they were already teaching you the new math back then. In 1977, when episode four came out, the first film, the special effects were way ahead of their time. I mean, looking back, you'd say, oh, this looks cheesy and that looks like a firecracker on a model. But at the time, in the theater, it was pretty fucking good. Keep in mind, I could list you the movies of the time that had, special effects, quote unquote, and they were all pretty fucking terrible. I'd say that the next film to come out after Star Wars would that would have special effects that are worth noticing, and certainly the use of scenery in a way that was believable, would be the film Alien, and that came out in 1979. But a lot of special effects improved in a lot of movies after Star Wars. The thing that we've talked about is that that's pretty much the guts of it, though, isn't it? It's like auto-tune. These movies, if you take away their special effects and all you have left is dialogue, a lot of them just sound kind of stupid. And that's where we're at. So I don't know about this film, The Acolyte. I don't really give a shit. I think a lot of this is designed to distract people at this point. The level of distraction, chaos, noise right now seems pretty insane, but it's been pretty fucking insane up and down since 2020. Has Iran, every day for the last few weeks, it's been Iran is launching a massive strike on the state of Israel in 24 hours. Every fucking day for almost a month. Iran is launching a massive strike in 24 fucking hours. 3 fucking weeks ago. It's all so gay. Here's an article from the New York Post. Headline, man bitten in the testicles by 12-foot snake in bathroom. Worst nightmare, blood everywhere. This was written by Natalie O'Neill and published on August the 21st, 2024, BoBlimpDoc. And I read on. A Thai man, meaning he's from Thailand, a Thai man was bitten on the testicles by a 12-foot python while he sat on the toilet. So he beat the serpent to death with a toilet brush, leaving his bathroom splattered in blood, according to reports and stunning photos. Thanet Thankavagadabadibian felt sharp pain after he took a seat Tuesday. So he reached down and grabbed the snake by the neck and tried to rip it off his privates. I felt something biting my balls. It was very painful. So I put my hands in the toilet to see what was wrong. I was shocked that I grabbed a snake, he said. When the snake didn't budge, he grabbed the toilet brush and began beating it in the head, prompting the snake to release its fangs, according to the outlet. I quickly stood up and plucked it out. I felt pain, really, really bad pain. There was blood everywhere. But I was more shocked to have found a python in the toilet, Thankavagadabadibian said. Jaw-dropping photos he posted on social media show the bloodthirsty serpent lying dead in his bathroom. Thankavagadabadibian was immediately taken to the hospital to get a tetanus vaccine, but he thankfully didn't need stitches, according to the UK Mirror. My testicles are safe now. I'm lucky it wasn't a venomous snake. A cobra would have killed me, he said, but I haven't used that toilet again since. It wasn't clear from the reports where in Thailand the attack took place. Several other people have been bitten by snakes while using the loo in Thailand in recent years. In May 2016, a 10-foot python sunk its teeth into Apawan Bagadugachuki's penis while he was relieving himself in Chagawagabongan province, according to the BBC. This is fucking crazy. These fucking snakes. Crazy. He wrestled off the scaly sucker, which had been hiding in his home plumbing system, and then was briefly hospitalized. In January 2020, a snake chomped down on a Thai mother's thigh as she sat on the pot, causing her to pummel it with a hammer, according to her daughter. Whoa. 10 months later, a 7-foot python bit Bumalong Plongkow's buttocks while she was on the toilet in the Samut Prakabongalong province. Sawi Pawamabom, who is also from the Smut Prakan province, was washing her hands when she spotted a 12-foot python in her toilet in March 2023, BoBlimpDoc. Two men are shown in wild footage smashing the toilet to get the massive serpent out of the pipe at her home. She was not bitten. Residents of Louisiana and Arizona were also gobsmacked to find snakes slivering up their toilet pipes last year. Yeah, this is a really important story. And if you want to sue me for racism because I didn't pronounce those names in any way remotely close, whatever, go ahead and read the article yourself. This is kind of terrible. these brown snake nightmares coming up our toilets. So there's somebody I listen to, and I'm not going to beat up on the person by mentioning the person's name, which adds a layer of protection for that person and myself. This is not a person I've ever met. I've never met this person. I don't know this person. I've never done a podcast with this person. So at least you know those things are true. It's not somebody you know. But it might be somebody you know of. In March of 2020, early March, I'd say definitely the first week of March, I kind of chucked the COVID off my shoulders for a lot of different reasons. And I don't want to go into all the reasons, but what I realized by early March, very early in the COVID, is that it was some type of military psychological warfare. And the first podcast I did on the subject where I came out and said it, I also said, okay, Bank Holiday. That's the name of the podcast, Bank Holiday. Best case scenario. Global austerity, cover up the fact that the banks are in a lot of trouble, because that's what late 2019 looked like, despite all the Trump bullshit. A lot of banks were in serious trouble in late 2019. And there was a lot of stuff busting and breaking under the surface. And one could have argued in March or April 2020 that the COVID monkey herpes, which would morph into the BLM race war, which would morph into the Putin drag queen Ukraine story time, which is now the rowdy morphin moffin moofy bots of Trump versus Kamala. Yeah. With Martin Sheen from the Dead Zone as Trump's VP. Yeah. There's a person who had at the time a big presence on YouTube. He was a complainer. Now, what do I mean by complainers? These are people on YouTube with like a bazillion followers who complain about censorship. They sort of sheep dip themselves that way. I always got banned before I got to 100 subscribers. But these are people who complain about censorship at about 1 million or 2 million. So let's just keep things in perspective, shall we? This complainer who you might know of, who I'd listened to for many years, because of his expertise, started talking about the COVID. And he didn't do so in a critical way. Like, this complainer would be critical of a whole bunch of things when he was talking his peak prosperity. There's a clue. But this fucking complainer was basically retelling stories in a serious way with his PhD to stand up for his veracity. This complainer was talking about stories about the fucking COVID crawling up people's fucking pipes in fucking apartment buildings and shit. This complainer spread a lot of fucking fear. In fact, I watched two or three of his shows, I think, in March of 2020, and I just said, I'm sick of this. Like, here's another example of someone. And you know what? In retrospect, I don't give a fuck if the guy ever apologized or ever figured out how fucking wrong he was. But that complainer pushed a fear that destroyed millions of people's lives. That complainer, who probably claimed to be buried, you know, at however hundreds of thousands of subscribers or millions he has, I don't give a fuck. That same complainer scared the fuck out of people, and it was bullshit. And one of the reasons why you still see freaks wearing coffee filters on their faces when it's 110 degrees is because of that fucking complainer. So yeah. The thing about the monkey herpes is that there's actually monkeys in Florida, supposedly, with herpes. And the thing about shit crawling up your pipes is there are places in this world where if your name is Sachiwan Badadimadam, some motherfucking snake might bite you in the fucking balls. And if it's a fucking cobra, I don't know how to put it, you're probably not going to make it. He bit you in the balls. He gave you a cobra boner. And now you're cobra boner dead. Fuck if I care. Next topic. So I'm going to read an article from PopSci.com. Headline, AI trained on AI churns out gibberish garbage. Eventually, it collapses, poisoned with its own projection of reality. Author is Mac DeGuerin, and this was published or posted on July the 25th, 2024. I'm going to drink a little bit of water there. I read on, assuming they'll let me. Large language models like those offered by OpenAI and Google famously require vast troves of training data to work. The latest versions of these models have already scoured much of the existing internet, which has led some to fear there may not be enough new data left. Oh God, all these pop-ups. New pop-ups left to train future iterations. Some prominent voices in the industry, like Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg, have posited a solution to that data dilemma. Simply train new AI systems on old AI outputs. But new research suggests that cannibalizing of past model outputs would quickly result in strings of babbling AI gibberish and could eventually lead to what's being called model collapse. In one example, researchers fed an AI a benign paragraph about church architecture, only to have it rapidly degrade over generations. The final, most advanced model simply repeated the phrase, black-tailed jackrabbits. Black-tailed jackrabbits. They built the ancient buildings before the mud flood, before the time of Glimptus. Black-tailed jackrabbits rose up from the muck swamp. A study published in Nature this week put that AI trained on AI scenario to the test. The researchers made their own language model, which they have initially fed original human-generated text. They then made 9 more generations of models, each trained on the text output generated by the model before it. The end result in the final generation was nonsense, non-essential, surrealist-sounding gibberish that had essentially nothing to do with the original text. Over time and successive generations, the researchers say their model becomes poisoned with its own projection of reality. I'm going to stop right here. If you've listened to my podcasts, and the link is in the notes if you want to read the whole article. If you've listened to my podcasts at all, going back almost a decade, I've been pretty solid on the issue of AI. From my perspective, I've been consistent. There's a book written by John Penrose, The Emperor's New Mind. I read it about, 35 years ago, plus or minus. And John Penrose, I think he's probably dead, but he was a famous British mathematician, and he was one of these folks in the world of artificial intelligence who was a critic of what's called strong AI. Weak AI is the belief that machines can become more intelligent to help us solve problems. That's called weak artificial intelligence. Strong AI is the belief that AI will supersede us, that AI will become more advanced than the human brain eventually. Understand, since the 1950s, we have been promised that computers would exceed human capacity and take over the world in about 10 years. Every year of my fucking life, I've been told in about 10 years, the machines are gonna take over. Skynet's gonna steal the gold. They'll launch all the missiles. They will blow you the fuck away. Yeah. A lot like fusion energy, stuff like that. It's always 10 years away or 5 years away. Going back to the moon, 5 years away. Anywho, John Penrose was a strong critic of strong AI. It's not that he didn't believe that artificial intelligence wasn't a thing. It's kind of like what John Searle once said. And John Searle proposed what's called the Chinese Room thought experiment. You can review it yourself. But John Searle once said that if you had a computer that had a model of a storm inside of it, which means a computer model, right? The computer model of a hurricane inside of a computer, a model of a hurricane. Is there really a tiny hurricane inside the computer? And that's the point that Searle makes, is that you have to draw a distinction between simulation and reality. You know how they say the map is not the territory? Well, a map, in a lot of ways, is a simple kind of computer. It's not a computer, but when you consider how maps work, they do assist us in solving problems. But the map is not the territory. Just because you have a map of the world doesn't mean you're holding the world in your hands. It's a model. It's a simulation. It's a representation. It's not the same thing. I had a job at Radio Shack in the year 1989, Bo Blimp Doc. I was a sophomore at the UW. There was a Radio Shack off of Lake City Way, not far from where the hookers sway. There was a pimp named Cold Daddy 14. He was going to be the Kumo D of Rumbly Rock. That year for Christmas, Radio Shack had these little teddy bears that recorded what you said and played it back, but they were voice actuated. So I had fun. I had two of these little Radio Shack teddy bears. This is a true story, folks. And you know, it was fun. I spoke loudly to one of the teddy bears, and then I put it in front of the other one. And keep in mind, these teddy bears record and are voice actuated. So they're basically copycats. So I recorded some type of fucking bullshit. It's one of the teddy bears. Put it in front of the other one and started the conversation. But really, by about the second or third iteration, it was like, rah, 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 rah. Garbage. There's nothing there. Noam Chomsky, who has been in and out of fashion at different times for different reasons, and I don't want to go into that. Noam Chomsky basically earned his PhD refuting the idea that you could reduce language to a topology. And I will say this, for the most part, these large language models are just complex topologies, you know, graphs, networks. And as such, as complex topologies go, they might, in fact, simulate language, but they're not really representing it. From Chomsky's perspective, there's something called deep structure. Now, for example, if a kid is born in the United States as a baby, but he grows up in Japan, that kid's going to learn Japanese. You know, kids are equipped to learn pretty much any kind of language. No, all of them. Every baby born can learn Eskimo, Russian, Chinese. It gets harder as we get older, but when we're born, we can learn them all. And one of Chomsky's arguments is, and this was mainly a refutation of Claude Shannon, and I don't want to go into all that, but one of Chomsky's principal arguments is that you can't reduce language to a finite state machine. And the simplest representation of a computer is basically a finite state machine. A lot like a map, actually. You know that thing I said about maps? Map's not the terrain, baby. I was critical, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when all this ChatGPT shit started happening. I said, listen, guys, it might be a fun toy. And it is, at times, a fun toy. Like, I play with Grok, and Grok is retarded as fuck, but Grok is also kind of a fun toy. It's also censored at this point, by the way. Like, I was able to generate some images with Grok just a couple weeks ago that Grok won't generate any longer. Grok just gives me speeches like, well, it looks like you're trying to be funny about Trump riding a hippo naked. And it's like, no, fucker, just draw me the fucking picture. So here's the deal. It's not just that Grok is retarded. Grok is, you know, being told what to say. I had a job at Getty Images in the year 2008. You know, the year that Obama won? And Getty had a search engine it used. And the problem was, is that if you typed in Osama by accident, or, excuse me, if you typed in Obama, the system would also search on Osama. It would do substitution searches. It was built into the system. And so you'd type in Obama and you'd get back Osama because, well, they assume you're making a spelling error. Okay. But then you get a bunch of pictures of, you know, Obama bin Laden or Osama. Osama. Yeah. Osama Obama. Yeah. I'm in a rare state of crazy this morning. Getty Images deliberately janked with their search engine so that Obama wouldn't be harmed. So if you come back to me and say, well, I can't believe they would, that Elon Musk, yeah, you better believe it. And Elon Musk doesn't give a fuck about you. Neither does Donald Trump or Kamala Bomala or that fucking weirdo she has running with them. These people don't give a fuck about you. I'm not even sure they have real jobs, which is another way of saying, if you were to ask me, does Kamala Harris have any power? The simple logical answer is no. And if you ask me, did Obama have any power? The simple answer is probably not. Neither did Bush or Clinton or Reagan. We could have a debate about John F. Kennedy, but well, you see how that worked out, right? He didn't have any power either, and he found out, didn't he? You know, he found out exactly how much power he had. And just like Vicky Weaver, John F. Kennedy found out another thing. Exactly how much the people of the land of the free and the home of the brave give a fuck once football season starts. You know, how much they give a fuck once that new Star Wars movie comes out. They don't give a fuck. The American people don't give a fuck. Yeah, that some people cared for a while about John F. Kennedy. And a lot of people still know about Vicky Weaver and Lon Horiuchi. But for the most part, most of your normie voters out there, I can ask my family, you ask yours, what happened at Ruby Ridge? If they give you a version, it's going to be, well, there are racist gun nuts up there waging war against America. How the fuck do you wage war against anybody in the backwoods of Idaho? You don't. You hide there. You get away from the world there. You separate yourself there. But you're not harming anybody. And that's the thing about Waco and Ruby Ridge and these stories that have so much in common. They weren't harming anyone. They didn't want to participate in your fucking system. If they happen to have screwball beliefs, those don't hurt you from Idaho. They don't. The reason why they were attacked had nothing to do with what they believed, folks. Not really. The reason why they were attacked is because of what they chose to do. To disconnect. To break the cycle. To set fire to the wheel. Anyways, I went off on a tangent, but I was skeptical of the whole AI bimbo eruption. I think I called it the AI bimbo eruption multiple times in the last couple years. And if you jumped in at the worst fucking time and put all your retirement funds into the AI bimbo eruption, fine. That's your problem, not mine. These large language models exhibit behaviors that look meaningful. But there's nothing there. They're not very deep. The reason why generating these models using previous models ends up in failure is the same reason why those two little teddy bears ended up producing gibberish rather quickly. It's called feedback. There is nothing there. The great thing about actual human discourse, well, there are a lot of cool things. Like real people talking to each other, sometimes they can say things without saying things, and that's a whole separate topic. We'll talk about the coffee filter if we go there. Or the mask. But another great thing about actual human dialogue is it's generative. It generates ideas. It doesn't just take the same ideas and bounce them back and forth. Yeah, in movies you'll see that. But the reason why it looks dumb and funny in movies is because it's, you know, fun and dumb. Real human dialogue is about not just sharing ideas, but growing ideas. People come up with ideas through conversation. In a lot of ways, one, you know, large language model generating its ideas off of another or generating a new model off of previous output, it is in very, you know, it is in a lot of ways like an AI having a conversation with another AI. And what we're learning is that there's nothing there. Yes, it's clever and it involves, you know, a lot of big data and it's interesting. And if you have not been around computer science in the last 25 years, you have been shocked and amazed. I've seen everything that Grok can do, I've seen before, just in other bits and pieces. The fact that they pulled it together into a kind of an interface, well, that's fine. But it's not super duper impressive. Next topic. By the way, I asked Grok what I look like based upon my Twitter, my tweets. It thought that I was either a young, hip, African-American woman or a Korean hooker. Next topic. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. If Ted Bundy founded a nation, it would look a lot like the modern state of Israel. Next topic, here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. Any university you want to attend is in a book. Well, that's worth kind of spinning on, right? I don't know. I was raised by people that believed certain things. Like one of the things my parents believed is if you have a college degree, that somehow the world magically opens up to you. And it might have been true when they were kids. Keep in mind, they were kids in the 30s and 40s. So when they were kids, almost 100 years ago, it might have been fucking true. I don't know that it's actually true now. But they believed it. And when I was in college, I kind of believed it too. And I thought I had a plan. And, you know, in defense of all that is corrupt, if I stuck to my plan, if I had actually stuck to it and become a lawyer, maybe I would be super rich today. I don't know. I might have lots of money. I wouldn't be living in a camper. Might have a wife with large boobs. You know, my third wife. She waits for me. In the hot tub, she rubs her boobies with body butter. Body butter. Needless to say, I guess if I had followed the plan, maybe I would be sitting pretty. I don't know. The truth is, every book you find, and when I say book, yeah, I also mean electronic, but these days, I think a lot of people need to consider purchasing printed books on paper, mainly because a lot of this stuff that's electronic is going to be, well, it's going to be awfully easy to delete and or edit, and the really creepy stuff is going to involve editing. You know, I don't know that it's going to be Fahrenheit 451 in this case. It's going to be more like 1984. They'll simply keep editing these books until what they mean is not at all what they mean. As Dr. Freckles said, any university you want to attend is in a book. Next topic. Here is a article about pneumonia in China. I don't want to read it. It's monkeypox fear. Here's an article about foreign workers in the state of Israel. I'll read this, sure. Headline, 100% of foreign agricultural workers were sexually assaulted, expert says. This was written by the Jerusalem Post staff, published October 20th, 2021. Out of 654 Thai foreign workers questioned, all of them said they had been exposed to sexual assault. I don't want to read this article. You can read it yourself. If you've noticed in recent podcasts that I've become hypercritical of the state of Israel, then yeah, you've been aware and you've been listening. I am. I'm critical in part because a lot of the things I was told growing up, especially in the last 10 years, I would say, have turned out to be false. But, you know, like a lot of people say, take the safe road, right? Don't spend too much time on it. Why would you? What I've come to realize is the possibility that there is a group of people. And again, we've talked about this before. I tend to be critical of these long-term historical cabals. But if you think of it like a grift or a con, it kind of makes more sense. There's probably, it seems like, a group of people that probably control the media and academia and a lot of our system at this point. And these people are probably not good people. And that's where I'm at. I don't think you should go out of your way to say to yourself you know who they are. I don't really know who they are. I know that 70 kilotons of TNT on 141 square miles in less than a year is insane. It's evil. It's insane. It's retarded. And also, it probably implies you're not winning. I'm not saying you're losing yet, but you're not winning. So there's a lot about what's been going on between Israel and Gaza since October of last year that doesn't make sense. It's like you can come back and say, well, Dan, this is the most advanced military in the history of, okay, there are necessary aircraft carriers. I get it, motherfucker. But then you start talking about paragliders and enough TNT to equal Hiroshima times three. And I'm like thinking to myself, these don't sound like sophisticated warriors. They don't sound like the necessary aircraft carrier. They sound like butchers, retarded butchers. So no, I'm not a fan of the state of Israel. And so if a story like this, and I'm going to be skeptical of all these stories, a story like this, you should be skeptical. Who knows what the truth is? But is it hard for me to believe at this point? Not really. It's not hard. And I think about our own police and our own cops and the way we work. Think about Ruby Ridge and Waco. Could Ruby Ridge and Waco have happened 30 years earlier? You know, would Eisenhower have been somebody who would have done that? Something was changing in the system. John F. Kennedy, before he was whacked by the people we're talking about, would he have done it? Probably not. Nixon? Unsure. But I would say every president after JFK will do a Ruby Ridge and has done one in a way. I mean, in a sense, look the other way. You remember MOVE 1985? Well, that wasn't the feds, but that was people that probably the feds went, nod, you know, go ahead and drop a shit ton of TNT on a building full of poor people. It's almost like there's a group of people with a certain pattern of behavior, which is indicative in 70 kilotons of TNT on 141 square miles in less than a year. It's almost like a people with a pattern of behavior that they've been influencing the way we do things too for a while. Like maybe the Vietnam War itself, if we really dig deep, is more connected to that than anything else. So no, it's not hard for me to believe the farming story. It's not hard for me at all. I met a raven the The other day I was going into town. I met a raven on the way to town. He stood in the middle of the road. He looked at me and said, "In 6 days the sky will open up and turn red with fire and wind and storm and lightning, and then you will die, Dan, you fuck." And I thought, shit, 6 days? That's great news. I saw an eagle circling overhead. The eagle, it was just circling, the eagle overhead. I saw an eagle circling overhead. The dead raccoon choir sang a song of Blue Cycle Lemonade, and the coyote dealers were starting their search for road foul. The eagle spoke to me and said, "A wind is coming that will sweep away mankind. You will be thrashed by the tempest, and your kingdom will fall." And you know what my response to that shithead eagle was? Shit, fuck, bitch. I have a kingdom! I have a kingdom. That's pretty cool. I got the message. I nearly drowned in a rolling river. I was hunting for silver. I told her I would deliver. Her eyes caught mine at the Swirly Club. She ran Tildo Swill for the Gimsley Gang. She would hang with the East Side Hoolies, eating taco treats and making bank. I grabbed that girl and made her a home under the bridge. Her name was Midge. I wanted to buy her a ring to bring her bling so her heart could sing. But I was nearly dead. And do you know what the angel Vogasil said? "Run to the hills. Find that grass that grows near the ledge. And hear me, crab scum, your days of love and rum are done. The moon will fall to earth. The land will shake. For 7 years, grab yourself a beer, son, 'cause you'll be dead in 3 months. And you know what I said to the angel Vogasil? Fuck, man. There's beer. A few months ago, I was stuck in the snow. There was a glow above me as a UFO slunk down and caught me on the ground looking for a butthole to probe. Out came green meanies covered in stardust and slander spice. They had a nice cozy feeling. Like, I don't know, you remember back 20 years ago, like a special flavored coffee on a Borders Books kind of Saturday, October day, pumpkin spice. The lead alien spoke to me using mind lasers. "Human, your species is monkey wrap pizza. Your hearts are cold and stale. We will implode your planet. You'll no longer get email. In 3 years, and you will return to the cosmos just like shit poop, just like solar dust." And you know what I said to those fucking aliens? "Wow, man. Good. We get pizza too." If you listen to this podcast and enjoy it, that's your problem, not mine. But if you do listen to it, listen to the disclaimer about donations. If you don't know this already, I am not a 501c3. So these are not tax deductible. I don't really feel like I should have to say it, but I'm going to say it anyways. Before you donate, take care of your food, water, shelter. A lot of people are having trouble these days. And a lot of people are having trouble, you know, making just basic ends meet, food, water, shelter. So before you donate to some random crazy person on the interwebs, donate, you know, to yourself by taking care of food, water, shelter. If you're setting aside extra food because you think a famine is coming, and yeah, I think a famine is coming. I think it's been sort of hot and heavy for half a decade now. I think it's getting pretty close to that point where even people in Rome, so to speak, will start noticing. So if you think a famine is coming and you're storing a little extra food, like let's say 6 months worth because you're an optimist, and you have a cat or a dog or a parrot, but let's just talk about dogs for a second. All pets apply. Before you donate to my podcast, make sure you have 6 months worth of food for your pet. If there are people in your life, I mean physically in your life, that need help, part of your community, help them first before you donate to random people on the internet. And last but not least, it is not the end of the world. It isn't. It's not the end of the world. So before you donate to my podcast or give any random person on the internet any money, donate to yourself, to your family. Take a break. Things are fucking crazy, but I am fairly certain a lot of the stuff we take for granted right now is going to be gone, spotty, not in the not-too-distant future, gone or spotty. So while things still kind of work, while you can still go to the grocery store and take out a loan on a steak, while you can still go see whatever bullshit movie they put out to make you feel bad about being white, while you can still do things that are semi-normal, go out on a date with your girlfriend, if you've done the things you need to do, you should do some of the things you want to do. So before you donate to my podcast, donate to yourself and give yourself a break. If you've done all these things and you want to donate, go ahead. The brutal truth is I've got like 10 bucks in my checking account. The good news is I've got, I think, 10 cans of chili and water for a couple days. But my rent is paid through the end of September. So, you know, fasting is good for you. This is not an emergency. I got enough food for at least a week or two if I stretch out those cans of chili. And that's the key ticket right there. I still have stuff. I can still survive. Still looking for work. You know, still a hopeful old hobo in the woods. But the truth is, I'm broke as fuck. If you want to donate, you can. But everyone I know is broke. Broke or they got their own responsibilities, which is pretty much the same thing. The point is, nobody's really got any extra money out there, except for the feds and people who are friends with them. I am not friends with them, so I don't, you know, have any of that extra fucking money. Anywho, if you want to donate, go ahead. You don't have to. Times are hard. For Friday, it's 7:30 a.m. for people who live on planet Sklimbo. Before you enter your starship, check for hyperrabies. There are cockroaches living in your butthole. There are snakes living in your pipes. Always check for snakes in your pipes. They're crawling the fuck up your pipe, baby. And have a great rest of your fucking day.